Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
You want the good news, you want the bad news?
I don't like either one of those options.
Your words are super wise, man.
You are a prophet. You deserve a prophet.
You do whatever you want. Who am I to tell you what to do?
But you're a psychologist.
Well, I know less than you do.
You're making me a better parent and a better wife, and thank God you're on the radio.
What planet are you on? I don't buy any of that stuff.
You know, I was looking for a deeper answer.
What are you talking about?
You make my afternoon really fun. Enjoy ya.
You're about the most exciting thing I have right now.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
My gentleman who collects up our household trash, they come 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. I never could figure that out. It's not like it's going to go bad. You know what I mean? You don't have to get to it early because it's going to go bad. It's already bad. I don't know how that has anything to do with this particular program. It's just a thought I had. Good to have you with me. I'm Dr. Ray Guarendi. The program here, The Doctor Is In. This is the Friday version, the typical Friday version. Every once in a while we open it up. But this version is Look Back Friday. You know how it goes if you've listened to this program any amount of time. We take previous calls. Sometimes they have to be edited because I say too much. We take previous calls, and then the irony is I get to say more. How do I select these calls? Depends. Every call, obviously, is not therapy. If it were, you could go in, well, you couldn't. I could. Maybe you could. In many directions in exploring what's going on. Uncovering variables, uncovering connections, trying to figure out what the person is saying to themselves about the whole scenario. You could go many different ways. On the radio, I generally let the caller set the direction because they know what they want to talk about. But every so often, I think it would be more helpful if I veered off and asked them some questions about something that they hadn't pondered about their situation. On Look Back Friday, there are calls that particularly stand out in terms of, gee, I sure wish I could talk about that. However, the focal point right now is what they're calling about. So Look Back Friday is reserved, and you will see what I mean as we play the call and then I come on and continue to say more, which is really easy for me to do. My wife and I have become the people we used to notice at Mass when we went in with our 10 children. There was a point where, well, we had 10 kids under 12, and so you can see that up until age 18, 19, when a couple of them veered off, we had about 6 years when there were 10 kids, and we had to find a big, long pew. And there was no way that my wife and I could sit between all warring parties. Now, that is of relevance to what I'm going toward. We are now the people who sit by ourselves at Mass, because all our children are pretty much on their own. And we are the people that when we first came to Mass and had all our children, we saw couples just sitting by themselves. And we didn't know if they raised one child, five children, ten children. We didn't know. I mean, but that's who we are now. We're the couple that just sits in Mass, just the two of us. I like it. We often will sit behind a large family. Recently, we sat behind a very lovely family, just delightful family. There was a 14-year-old boy who was clearly taking care of his younger brother who had some struggles, and it was just heartwarming to watch. However, we noticed something. It was the bathroom parade. This one would get up and go to the bathroom. I have to go to the bathroom. Okay. Then when that one came back, another one had to go to the bathroom. Must have reminded them they had to go to the bathroom when they saw a sibling go to the bathroom. Then some of the more slick, calculating ones said, I'll take the little one to the bathroom. And this parade went on. And we've seen it with large families. Sometimes we've seen one kid two or three times go to the bathroom. Now, what this does is it places the parents in a bit of a conundrum. Well, if they have to go to the bathroom, how do I know if they have to go to the bathroom? You can't just say, okay, because then what happens if there's an accident? So I'm sort of stuck here. Well, my wife and I found a solution to this bathroom parade. We told the kids, all right, make sure you go to the bathroom before we go. Because at Mass, if you have to go to the bathroom, you can go. However, if we go to breakfast or we go out to eat, which we typically did, you will not get to order what you want. And we didn't go to expensive places, so they ordered surf and turf. We usually went to some fast food places that kids eat free. Or barring that, if we didn't go out, when we got home, something happened. I mean, the bathroom trip cost. It was that simple. What happened? Did we have accidents? Not a one. How many kids got up during Mass to go to the bathroom? Not a one. Now think about this a second. Logically follow it out. If, in fact, they truly had to go to the bathroom and it was urgent, they would get up and go. Now, the appearance was, prior to our decision about it will cost you to go to the bathroom during Mass, prior to that, we had a number. They figured, okay, look, I'm getting restless. I'm heading to the bathroom. And some of the little older children just lingered in the bathroom. Where were they? They missed the whole homily. So we were not about to say you can't go to the bathroom, so no matter what, you better hold it, because they're kids. But we noticed that as soon as we put a price tag on the bathroom trip, they found ways either to make sure that they went to the bathroom at home so they could make it through a one-hour Mass without too much trouble. Now, Dad couldn't, but they could. Or, if the urge was overwhelming, they went to the bathroom knowing there would be a cost. It got to the point where virtually none of the kids were getting up and going to the bathroom anymore. It just didn't happen. So what's that tell you? Well, there was at least a little bit of a component of, I'm restless, I'm bored. They're not going to stop me from going to the bathroom. They're certainly not going to let me get up and go to the back and sing a song. But, you know, going to the bathroom, that's nature calling, man. You can't do anything about that, can you, Mom and Dad? We've noticed a pattern that the larger families, God bless them, they're sweet looking, they do a very admirable, we're like the two people who just sit and watch and smile, remember in those days. But we noticed that the kids are very good. There's usually two or three or four of them during any Mass who all just have to go to the bathroom. And the parents are not sure what to do. They don't want them to get up and leave during Mass and maybe not come back for 9 minutes. But at the same time, come on. this is physiology here. This is nature. What are you doing? This is not a kid who's being defiant and disruptive at mass, is it? So we just put a little price tag on it. And it was a miracle. Miracle. We didn't really have too much more of let me crawl over six siblings to get to the end of the pew to get and go to the bathroom. When we come back, Erin from Ohio. She had a lot of old friends that she related to. She really did in her younger days. She doesn't anymore. And this is a very common reason why.
I don't want to talk about it.
You don't want to talk about it? Then why did you bring it up in the first place?
The doctor is in. Now, don't you feel better?
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
If you have sustained conversation with non-Catholic Christians, one of the things that always comes up is, why do you confess to a priest? Why would you go to a priest when you can go straight to God? I would say, well, look, I went to Jesus, I looked at his word, and it told me to go to a priest. It is interesting. One of the first things you notice right towards the end of the Gospel of John, that Jesus himself determined to forgive and retain sins through human intermediaries. If you forgive the sins of any, they are forgiven. If you retain the sins of any, they are retained. And Jesus commissioned his apostles on earth to speak in his name, to forgive sins or retain sins, not just metaphorically, but metaphysically.
Cresta in the Afternoon with Al Cresta for Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Step away from the turmoil of the day. In A Holy Hour with Mother Angelica, you'll find lessons that touch every aspect of our relationship with God and our neighbor. These meditations and prayers will help you turn to Jesus in your everyday life. A Holy Hour with Mother Angelica from EWTN Publishing, now available at EWTNRC.com or call 1-800-854-6316.
Good to be with you. I'm Dr. Ray Guarini. This is my age. Good to be anywhere. Very, very nice to have you here on this Look Back Friday of The Doctor's Inn. Erin from Ohio called. This was, I don't remember when this call was. Probably a couple months ago. March. Okay, thank you, Andrew. Yeah, more than that. She has drifted. She drifted quite away from many of her old friends. Has she become difficult? Has she become on the wild side and her old friends are really not wanting much to do with her because she's just a bad influence? Is that what happened?
My friends and I, my two girlfriends, we've been friends since high school. And we have ended up throughout the years going very, separate ways. I fell back into my faith hardcore practicing Catholic now. And my two friends have gone, I would say, the opposite in the world and spiritualisms and liberalism and progressivism, feminism, all the stuff. And so you can imagine when we come together, it's kind of like, what do we talk about at this point? Because they're getting more into they're doing some weird stuff now. I kind of have had it, I guess, like manifesting spirits, and I don't know. I feel extremely uncomfortable now to even be around them at this point. And they want me to be the type of friend that supports what they're doing because they believe that that is what it means to love someone. You support whatever they do.
So if they take cocaine, you should support that.
Yeah.
So what have you told them?
Well, they certainly know that I am highly against it. And, you know, they're now kind of pushing back and just simply saying, you know, we appreciate that, like, you are concerned, but, you know, there's no considering that it's bad.
I wouldn't think so. They think you're judgmental.
Oh, yeah. I, you know, at this point, Dr. Ray, I feel like a friend who is, like, a nagging mother or a controlling mother who's saying, no, 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 stop, don't, please don't do that. I don't feel like a friend who is willing to sit there and actually kind of listen to the underlying, you know, they're seeking, and I understand that. It's just, you know, the world is a lot more appealing. It's like when you've never really been given a solid foundation in any religion, real religion, I guess, and that's kind of the background for both of them. And I have definitely had an upbringing in the Catholic faith, two parents who were staunch about that. And so I understand where this kind of path can lead and have looked into it myself as far as, like, what the world offers. So I am at a crossroads of finally just saying, look, I'm too uncomfortable to be around you guys. But because I'm a Christian, you know, do I stick around? Because otherwise, who else do they have? And that's where I'm at.
Do they expect you to take any part in some of the stuff they're attracted to?
No, but they will try to convince me of it.
So they won't. They're the ones that won't let it go.
Yeah, I mean,
you're not the one nagging them. They won't let it go, and then you respond negatively, and you think you're nagging.
Yeah. If I could be honest.
No, don't be honest. We don't want honesty here. All right, go ahead. Be honest.
I have not always. We've grown up together, so I've made a lot of bad decisions in the past. They have seen me get out of, go through, have been there for me in those, and I wasn't. They weren't very Christian decisions, and so I have transitioned into taking my faith seriously and have been very judgmental towards them still, and you know, I've not led them well from a Christian perspective, like what they should do. It has come off. You know, I haven't done the best job a Christian could be doing, you know, and so, you know, maybe they're jaded as well towards what I have to say, and so as I push, they push.
I think it's time for you to not talk your religion with them. It's probably also time for you to decide if, in fact, this friendship is contingent upon you agreeing with them. You can't agree with them. So as long as they know that, and as long as they accept that you are who you are and you believe what you believe, and they will not attempt to incorporate you into their ways, I think you're okay. But if they become more inveterate, more pushy about all this, then at some point you have to kind of quietly retreat. You don't have to say, I'm retreating from you because you're lost souls. You don't have to do that. But they'll see that you're not around as much. You're just not available as they attempt to make contact. So you're going to have to make the judgment as to, I want to stay friends with them within certain conditions. And one of those conditions is that you don't continue to push upon me what you think is the right way to pursue spirituality as opposed to what I believe. If you want to at all explore it with them, you don't have to tell them how wrong they are. You have to ask them how they got to that point. Why is it that you think this is the way to do it? Tell me, how did you arrive at this? How did you decide that this is something that you can be involved in. Now, again, you have to decide, too. I mean, if it's something that really gets spiritually shaky, you just don't be around it. You can't.
Right. Yeah.
You're not, your role is not to save them.
Okay.
See, I think that's where part of you feeling the confusing pull. On one hand, I've got to show them the truth. But on the other hand, they're into something much more deeply. These are not people who are searching. These are people who have decided they've already found it.
Okay.
So that's where you got to be careful. You're not being unchristian if you say to yourself, well, this isn't really something I'm gonna rotate around.
Okay.
And if it comes up, you can simply say, hey, guys, that kind of pursuit is so foreign to where I am that I really can't immerse myself into it. I love you, but that's not where I want to go. And if they keep pushing, then you've got to decide we've just drifted too far apart. We think we're all so sophisticated. We look back on previous ways of thinking, and those throwbacks just aren't as enlightened as our culture now is. And yet we live by certain quasi-philosophies that destroy relationships. One of them is this, and this is what Aaron is experiencing. If you don't applaud and celebrate what I choose to do, then you are rejecting me. You are not permitted to view what I do as, at the very least, not for you, and at the very worst, harmful to me. You're not permitted that. I think this is an outbreak of the heavy, heavy, heavy self-image movement that got momentum gone in the 70s and 80s, and this is how it's turned cancerous, which is you absolutely must celebrate however I choose to live my life, whatever I choose to pursue, and if you don't, you're the wrong one. You're the evil one. That's the first one. The second one is this. Aaron is not allowed to think as she wishes to think. Even were she to not say a word about what they're doing, what they're pursuing, at all, she makes no comment. She doesn't in any way dispute it. She just says nothing. She will still be accused of judging them. Why? How can that be? Very simply, and this again is something that a lot of people with traditional morals and faith-filled values get. That's a dumb word. Have to absorb, if you will. I know how you think. You don't have to say anything. I know what your values are. I know what you believe. So therefore, the mere reality that you believe what you believe is a judgment upon me. That's where we're at. I think it reflects, believe it or not, in a culture that just chases self-esteem and self-image, it reflects insecurity widespread. If I'm a secure person, I don't need you to approve of how I look at things. I can accept that you don't. Okay. I will pursue what I wish to pursue. But to the degree that I'm insecure, you better celebrate the way I look at things. You better celebrate my life choices. You better celebrate everything I want to do. Especially sexually, and especially as I chase some kind of quasi-religious sort of system that I've latched on to. You better just applaud it because it's all the same. And if you don't, as you see with Aaron's friends, I'm not sure I want to have you in my circle anymore. I don't think Aaron's the one who's making the circle closed. I think it's her friends.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Now, when Jesus was on earth, he taught us a great lesson. He taught us that he came for the sinner, not the virtuous. He came for you because you are imperfect, because sin comes easy to you, and sometimes you don't have the willpower to say no. But you see, if you understood the awesomeness of God and all his power and all his wonder, and he comes down to our level. He wanted to feel. How do you feel? I don't know anybody that loves anyone that much. And this imperfect being that's you and me and all of us, he did it for us. That's why you should never despair, because you're imperfect.
For more information on Mother Angelica, visit Religious Catalog at EWTNRC.com.
What responsibility does social media bear in promoting the truth? The Catholic Catechism notes that in our modern society, the communications media plays a major role in societal information, cultural promotion, and formation. Since society has a right to information that is based on truth, justice, freedom, and solidarity, every segment of the communications culture bears a heavy responsibility for the common good. Media content within the bounds of justice and charity must be true and complete and communicated honestly and properly. The Catechism cautions us to be vigilant rather than passive consumers of information in order to resist unwholesome influences. Journalists are urged to respect the facts while still observing charity by not stooping to defamation of individuals. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hello.
Hi there, Dr. Ray.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Hey, how are you doing?
The doctor will see you now.
Major cool. Some might point out the contrast between the bumper music and the show talk. I don't care. I'm Dr. Ray. Thank you so much for joining me here. Doctor is in. This is Look Back Friday. Let's take another one. This is, I would say, well, it's up there in the reasons why people seek marriage counseling. It's sort of an after-the-fact struggle. And it is something that both spouses underestimate the long-term reverberations of, as Warren is finding out.
My wife and I kind of separated because of the coronavirus, and she we went to stay with my mom because her work had several people with corona, and my mom is 85, so we didn't want to take it to her. So it ended up being a longer separation, and we only planned it to be a couple of weeks, and it ended up being several months. And during that time, she ended up having an affair on me. And we've reconciled since, and she says she's sorry, and I'm just having a real hard time getting past it and forgiving her and all.
Do you want to leave the relationship, Warren?
No.
Okay. So okay, go ahead.
I've got three little girls from 6 to 9. No, I don't want to leave it.
Okay. Well, that's the first thing you got to decide. Because if you are going to stay in that marriage, which you've said, I want to do, leaving is not an option.
Right.
Good. You are on your first step toward forgiveness. I would suggest that I'm hoping you believe your wife. I'm hoping she's being honest about all this. And if that's the case, then don't worry so much about having the right emotions of forgiveness. In other words, I just don't feel warm toward her. I can't get it out of my mind. I don't want to be with her. I just keep thinking about it.
See, I can feel warm towards her, and everything like that, but it's just when she goes to work and I'm at my work and I'm just thinking of her being with another guy, it just breaks my heart.
Be careful, and I know this is going to sound really funny. Be careful that you don't take it personally. Oh, Dr. Ray, what are you talking about? How could you not take it personally? Warren, what she did, I'm sure she admitted to you, she feels bad about, and she was wrong. But when you say to yourself, how could she do this to me? After all the love I've shown her, after what a wonderful husband I've been, assuming that's what you think, how could she do this? Well, she did it out of moral weakness. May have had nothing at all to do with you. But if she'd loved me enough, she wouldn't have done it. We can talk about that one if we had a lot more time.
Pardon me, but I don't think it would ever happen had we separated. I think she got lonely. And
okay, perhaps.
I think that was the bigger driver.
Okay, then it isn't personal in your mind. So what I would suggest is that you do what you can to treat her well, as best as you can treat her. Just fake it if you have to. Treat her well. Know that time will allow you to warm up and her to warm up. I've seen so many marriages who have survived this. So many. I can't. If I open these phones up right now, they'd be flooded with people who said we're stronger in our marriage now than we were. That was a faux break. That was a feint. That was a break on the original call. We don't have a break here for another 3-4 minutes. Did you hear the key line that he said in his call? He said, when I'm at work, and then I start thinking about it, her being with someone else, then it gets me. We tend to rehearse in our minds a wrong. We think about it. We look at it from many angles. How could they? I don't know if I can accept this. Why would they? And on and on and on. We dwell. We dwell on it. We don't say to ourselves, this dwelling is not good. All I am doing is rehearsing my hurt, my distress, my upset, whatever it is that's destroying my peace. Why do we think that we have to continue analyzing, thinking, pondering, swirling thoughts in our head, the net result of which is to make us feel bad? Why do we do this? Warren already admitted that when he's distracted with life, when he is involved in other pursuits, he doesn't think about it. And by not thinking about it, he doesn't feel so bad. So he's already made the link. It's the thinking that's making him feel bad. It's not necessarily the fact that his wife did what she did. Oh, come on, Dr. Ray. If she didn't do what she did, he wouldn't be thinking about it. Yes and no. He's overthinking about it. Why didn't you say all this during the call? Because I had to pick and choose what I had to say because I only had a couple of minutes to say it because the break was coming up. And there were probably other people waiting. And I knew this was going to be a look-back call anyway. The one angle that I wanted to take on this call was that, by and large, we don't recognize how much our retread thinking about an event destroys our peace. We think that it's just natural to keep spinning our thoughts all around the event. We just do it. We don't say to ourselves, I've kind of thought this to death here. I'm ready to quit thinking about it.
How do you quit thinking about it?
You can do that, you know. You can do that, you know. You're not a victim of saying, I have to think about it. You don't have to think about it. You can distract yourself. You can actually thought stop. That was a technique that we had learned back in grad school. Regarding something like this. They called it thought stopping. Typically, we approach this like an echo chamber. Our thoughts just keep re-echoing in our head until they finally fade away because we're exhausted or because something grabs our attention. But then we pick them back up when we're alone or quiet or have time to do that. We don't actively say, why am I doing this to myself? I know what happened. I know how I felt about what happened. And I'm thinking about what I'm going to do from this point forward. We don't end it there. We do not end it there. We continue to rehearse.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I often go back to my childhood. In church, we love to be reverent, to Christ present in the Eucharist, to Christ on the cross. But I was also impressed by the reverence of my friends in the Salvation Army. They had a little band, and I used to walk past the band on Sunday morning on my way to church. And I was just a child, but I said, you know, they're trying to pray to God. They're showing reverence to God. All this was reverence. Now what do I see? I hear one irreverence after another. And week after week, month after month, the media churns out things that make fun of religion in general and make fun of Christianity in particular, and particularly make fun of the Catholic Church. No class. Absolutely no class.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Here's the new challenge. At least 1 hour a week in front of the Blessed Sacrament with the goal of an hour a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I had a guy come up to me and he says, Father, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm in a men's fellowship. I pray with my wife every day. I go to Mass every Sunday and usually a couple times during the week. I read Scripture. He goes, I want more. I said, do you pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament? He said, outside of Mass, no. I said, I think that's the more. See, all these saints, these are the ones who surround us. These are the ones who ran before us. These are the ones who fought well, who kept the faith. They would tell you, as would every single saint in heaven right now, you cannot run this race if you don't spend time with the Master. Whatever else we're doing, it's second, third, and fourth. First things need to be first. And the first thing is to be with the Master. And the Master is Jesus.
I still am doing what I used to do in my senior year in high school. We had some kind of gym class where we had to learn to dance or something. I was probably the best dancer while I was sitting in my seat. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I looked like I had the moves sitting in my seat. Now, I didn't want to get up, because that would involve all of my limbs, but sitting in my seat. So when I have a good bumper music like that, that's kind of got that Latin feel to it. You could see it. I'm still recall some of that. Chris from Ohio is concerned, and this is a generic question that I oftentimes get in therapy. Parents are wondering if they should expect their child to learn from consequences. Maybe he's not capable. How do we know? So, Chris is asking about this.
You know, I listen to you every day, and I hear people talk about their children and the issues they have with them from a consequences standpoint and not being able to deal with it. Because I dealt with it for about 10 years here with a child that couldn't process consequences.
Now, what do you mean by that? Couldn't process, God? What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, you know, we'd say, don't do that, or this will happen.
Okay.
And he would do it anyway. And we're talking about, like, his favorite thing. So it was, like, from age 3 to age 13, you know, we tried to do, you know, he wasn't diagnosed with ADHD, but, you know, we took him to play therapists, and we did all kinds of treatments without the use of drugs. We wanted to see what we could do to find out, because he had rage issues, and we've got four kids, and it just, the household here was just not a good scenario dealing, because he had sisters that he would constantly pick on, and he was the kind of kid that this is not uncommon that we would have to sit on him for 2 hours because of his rage. And, you know, kick and spit and all this stuff. And, you know, we finally took, so one of my curiosities, number one, do you believe in ADHD? The kids truly can't process it. You know, we would take away, you know, his devices, his sleepovers. And, you know, it got to a point where, you know, it didn't matter what the consequences were. And we tried to do our best to stick with him, but nothing worked.
Where is he now, Chris?
Well, now he's a senior. He's well adapted now. We took him to a place called Brain Balance. And so I was kind of curious what your thoughts on, it's kind of like neuroplasticity. Because what we found out, we went and had him assessed, and like his left brain wasn't talking to his right brain. So he, it was such a dominant, all of his synapses were firing so much on his right side of his or left side of his brain that he couldn't process. So they kind of rewired his brain. It was a 6 month process where he had to go 3 times a week. And I want to get your thoughts on it. Was it, I don't know if it was you ultimately think it, we didn't consequence properly long enough for him.
Okay. First of all, the average parent who comes into my office totally at their wit's end with a kid says pretty much everything you say.
Right.
He doesn't learn from discipline. You called it processing. What we do doesn't matter to him. He is our toughest kid. He pushes us to our very limit. They all say that.
Right.
So they say that. The implication is this kid's incorrigible. The normal discipline, even better than average discipline, doesn't work with this kid. That's what they believe. The majority of parents can do things to make the situation better. They have to look at it, and they realize there are things they can do, so they're kind of misguided in their perception of things. Now, that's my experience. I don't know if that's what the case is with yours. I don't know. You said something interesting. You said he's fine now, which tells me that what you were doing all those years eventually kept the lid on things so that a certain amount of neurological maturity took place. Whether it took place because of that intervention or not, you can't know. It took place so that he's definitely better. Third, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Yes, it is a legitimate condition, but it depends how you define it. And an awful lot of folks think their kid does have that diagnosis when, in fact, he's probably not severe enough, although he has significant behavior problems, which confuses the picture. Given all what you've said, I'm awfully glad things are much better for you. But you, in describing your scenario as briefly as you did, you pretty much gave the picture that I hear in my office the vast majority of the time when somebody comes in with a 13-year-old and says, this kid, he messes with his siblings, he hurts them, he doesn't learn from consequences, etc. And then I have several questions that I ask them that gives me an indication of what is actually going on in the home and if indeed we can do things. But I'm real glad for you that things have settled down, and I think that is because your perseverance in your parenting finally kicked in over time.
Notice what Chris said. He said it didn't work. Well, of course it did. He attributed his son's self-control and maturation to this quote-unquote brain rewiring. Neurologically, the brain is plastic. That means it can alter itself even after trauma, after stroke. Learning is plastic, okay? You didn't have a certain skill. You go play tennis and you become very good at it. Your brain helped a rewiring so that your muscles are now a better tennis player. So plasticity and learning in the brain is going on constantly. The most I can say about this kind of, well, his left side was not active enough, and it was his right side that was doing this, and we had to rewire his brain. The most benign thing I can say about that is it's controversial. Truly controversial. That's the first thing. But Dr. Ray, I've seen it work. You haven't seen it work. You've seen changes in your own situation, which is kind of a one-time testing, anecdotal evidence. How much do I think that what Chris described was parents who were defeated early on defeated. And I'm not saying that of his children, this kid wasn't the toughest. I'm not saying that. The kid probably was the toughest. Maybe by a stretch, he was the toughest of the kids. I got that. That's the way it is with most parents, by the way. They come into the office, there's one kid who's just driving them nuts. And it's been going on for years. And as a result, a lot of bad habits have formed. I have a lot of questions I ask the parents that reveal significant problems. Let me just give you a very common one. Parents will come in. Nothing we try works. We've tried everything. Nothing works. This kid is really tough. We're not sure what to do. We're very consistent. So I ask, how many times on a given day does this kid misbehave? And then I define misbehavior for him. I mean, it's specifically operationally defined. He torments a sibling. That's one. He torments a sibling again. That's two. He torments a sibling a third time. That's three. You ask him to do something once, he ignores you. That's one. You ask him a second time, he ignores you. That's two. You tell him, go do it, and he doesn't. 2 minutes later, you find out you didn't. That's three. So in counting that way, they laugh. Oh, well, you can't count it. It's constant. So I need a number. I'll tell you what. Here's your number, 50. Oh, well, I don't know if it's that much. If he's awake 15 hours, that's three an hour. Oh, it's at least 50. Okay, I got you. Next question. If you tell him to accept some piece of discipline for whatever it is, whether it's an essay, whether it's a corner, whether it's his room, whatever you decide as a consequence, how often does that happen per day? And he must accept it without a fight. And they look at me as if to say, what planet are you on? We told you. I said, I need a number. 90% of the parents I talk to, the number is between 0 and 2. Let's do the percentages. 50 pieces of misbehavior. Let's just say 2 consequences. And that's really high for most parents, by the way. Believe it or not, as much of a discipline problem as a child is, 2 is a lot. I had a couple 5s and 6s once, but 2 is up there. 2 divided by 50 is 4%. That's the consistency level. 96% of the time, this child does something that the parent thinks is wrong, inappropriate, troublesome, whatever, and the parent either yells or nags or reminds or cajoles or does something that sounds like discipline but is not. And it teaches the child, here's the dance. Here's how we do this. That can make a child seem very, very ugly. Of my 10 adopted children, several had just turbulent, drug-exposed, alcohol-exposed experiences, both in the womb and shortly thereafter. By all research indications, these should be very tough children to raise in terms of defiance, learning problems, temperamental quirks. My wife and I did not have discipline problems per se, meaning we didn't have defiance. We had sneakiness and we had testing. Oh, yeah, we had a lot of that. But we didn't have the defiance that brings parents to my office saying, I can't control this kid. Why not? Well, first of all, my wife is a very, very strong, competent disciplinarian, and she loved the kids, but she also didn't tolerate any nonsense. And there were heavy consequences for certain kinds of misbehavior, and that's the way it was from the time they were little. So I'm not saying that we're in any, this is not to say that we are somehow elite parents. We're not. My wife's a far better disciplinarian than I am. What I'm saying is it's an encouragement to parents who think this kid is just wired so badly, there's nothing I can do to make this situation better. It just keeps getting worse. When in fact, and sometimes I'll even tell them, you know, a couple of my kids were so wired they would eat your son for lunch. Why did they not do to us what your son is doing to you? And that's, you got to be careful because you don't want to hold yourself out as some kind of superior parent. That's not true. But I'm simply saying it's a testament to the power of parental confidence and meaning it. And I think that in Chris's description of what was going on with his child, there was an awful lot of, we had to search to find out what was wrong with him. We put him through 6 months of brain balancing. All right. You can't really rewire the brain that way. You can have some new learning, and supposedly you can conclude that new learning is going to generalize into the way this kid defies his parents. That's a stretch. In all likelihood, there were many other factors at play that improved the way he acted. Could talk about that one for a long time, but I can't because I have to take a break.
Solidarity HealthShare began out of the Christian tradition of neighbor helping neighbor. They're a nonprofit medical cost-sharing ministry in which their members share in each other's eligible medical expenses. Solidarity HealthShare is not insurance, but rather an alternative way to pay for medical costs that adheres to the teachings of the Catholic Church. They'll never share in a medical care that goes against their values and morals, such as abortion, contraception, and sterilization. More information available at SolidarityHealthShare.org or at 844-313-4999.
We need EWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. My latest book, Jesus, the Master Psychologist, Listen to Him, talks about how Jesus was 2,000 years ahead of modern enlightened psychology. If he's God, he knows the absolute best way to live, whether psychology agrees or whether it doesn't. Go to AveMariaRadio.net to get your copy. Jesus will tell you the best way to live.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
Rather than continue to look back, little Freudian slip there, look back on Chris's call, I want to just give you this C.S. Lewis quote. If the universe is so bad, or even half so bad, how on earth did human beings ever come to attribute it to the activity of a wise and good creator? Ponder that. If all of this is just so bad at so many levels, but yet the being, who created it is ultimately wise, infinitely wise, and infinitely good. So obviously, there is something that can come out of the way the universe is. And the infinitely wise and good creator would know this. So this is a variant of the old problem of suffering. There's so much suffering, how can you say God's good and wise? Because we don't understand how he can take care of it. Because we just don't know everything. All we're looking at is through our little sliver of a lens in our time-bound perception. Thank you for joining me here on this Look Back Friday. My thanks to Andrew Kruchek, the producer man and editor man of all Look Back calls. Good Lord permitting, see you next week. Walk with God. Always.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.